Welcome to You Can Sit With Us, a podcast by women, for women, celebrating you and the life you're living, no matter where you're at.
I'm Claire Hamill, a blogger, mom, multifaceted entrepreneur, and aspiring rebel. I'm a former rule follower that now believes there are no rules. So whether you follow them or break them, you have a place here.
I'm Beth Morse, a life and career coach, mama, connector, and recovering perfectionist. I'm here to get real about how messy life can be and want to sit with anyone who's in the midst of rumbling with their own story.
We're going to bring the raw, the funny, and the real to life, and no matter where you are, you can sit with us.
Hey guys, it's Beth. Welcome to an all new episode of the You Can Sit With Us podcast. I am so excited because today I'm going to be joined by one of the nasty gals. If you've been listening to the podcast for any amount of time, you've probably heard me talk about this awesome group of women that I have been friends with for almost 2 years now. We have an incredible text group that we're constantly going back and forth in. And recently we were able to go see an author speak on her newest book. So we started reading Rage Becomes Her, The Power of Women's Anger by Soraya Chemaly. And she came to Seattle this last week and we got tickets to go see her speak. It was amazing. And so today, my friend Catherine is going to be joining us to chat about her takeaways from the talk, from the book, and just kind of dig into the topic of anger and what it means for her. I think you guys are going to really love our conversation. I know I did, so can't wait for you to check it out. Hi, Catherine. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I'm so glad to have one of the nasty gals on.
Am I the first?
You're the first one. I know. So now the text group is going to blow up and they're all going to say, I want to be on.
I know. I actually just shared in the text group, I don't know if you saw it yet, that I got my very first white hair ever.
I did see that. It was something very exciting.
I'm very excited about it. I've been waiting to go gray since like college. My mom stopped dyeing her hair like my sophomore year of college. She has this gorgeous gray, peppery, gray white hair. And my grandma on my dad's side has gorgeous, you know, Asian white, beautiful hair.
Sure.
And so I'm very much looking forward to it.
I'm excited for you. And I love that we're just embracing age because yeah. Age is a gift. If you're not getting older, it means you're dead.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so true.
It's true though, right? Like birthdays
so
are
true.
A gift.
So true.
So yeah, good for you. Also,
thanks.
Congrats on your white hair.
Thank you. I lost her when I was straightening it, I think. I can't find it now, so it may have lived a short life, but I will forever cherish it.
As someone who is a few years older than you, I'm going to tell you that you have more coming. Don't worry.
Excellent.
So Kat is joining us today to talk about an author that we had the opportunity to go see earlier this week. Her name is Soraya Chemaly, and she is the author of a new book called Rage Becomes Her, The Power of Women's Anger. Mm-hmm. And our friend Sarah suggested this book as the introduction to a book club. And here we go. We just dove right into big stuff.
Started with a bang.
We really did. So I'm almost finished with the book. Kat, have you started it or not yet?
I have started it. I got through the introduction, which was very thorough. It was a great introduction.
Yes.
And then I started the first chapter. However, the last couple weeks have been very busy for me at work, and I've gone through a stressful negotiation at work. And so I found it somewhat triggering while also informative. So I'm going to go back to the book. The talk was so great. And I'm really excited to go back to the book.
Yeah.
And finish it now. But I'm not super far into it.
Gotcha. So tell me, like, what was your big takeaway from Soraya's talk on Thursday night?
Ooh, yeah, a couple. So I think one of the things I really liked about her talk was her focus on intersectionality. I think that it's impossible to have a conversation about human emotion without talking about the intersectionality of human identities, right? So for myself, you know, I identify as an Asian American female, or multiracial, either one's fine with me. And it's really impossible for me to think about anger without thinking about it through that lens, right, for me. So I think that that was a really great takeaway for her, was that, you know, white women's experience with anger is different than Black women's, than Latina, than Asian, than, or multiracial, along with the different approaches if you're, you know, given your political identity, or different experiences given your political identity. There's, and so I just appreciated that aspect. And I also really appreciated the way that she made claims assertively. She said things like, when we sever the ties, what was her language? Something about severing the ties of anger to femininity, we're taking away the anger as an emotion for women. We're just saying anger can't have it. Women can't have anger. They just can't. And I thought that making that claim so assertively was so powerful, because I think we'd hum and haw about that in our groups sometimes. And she just said, no, by society severing anger from female emotion, they are no longer allowed to feel it. It's just cut out of our experience completely. Yeah. It was just really powerful.
Yeah, that was something she talks about really early in the book, is the difference of the way that from the time that we're young, from the time that we're like in first grade, I think that's about the time that she started saying boys and girls started identifying that for boys, it was okay to feel angry. It was socially acceptable to feel angry. But for girls, they weren't allowed to feel angry. Instead, they were told to feel sad. And that was something that just struck me as a mom of three kids. We have three kids in the house. We have a son who's 11, and then two girls who are both 9. One is almost 10. And so I talked to my 9-year-old. I talked to Macy. She saw me reading the book. She goes, what are you reading? And I said, oh, I'm reading a book with some friends. And she goes, no, but what's it about? She saw the title, and it's a striking title.
Right? Oh, bless Macy.
I know. I love her. And so I said, well, it's a book about being angry as a woman, and, you know, what that looks like, and kind of how to deal with it. And I said, do you ever feel angry sometimes? And what she said to me was so profound. She said, sometimes I feel angry, but really more often I feel sad. And it was like a punch to my gut, because I went, oh my word, this is exactly what Soraya's talking about in the book. And my daughter went on to tell me a story about an interaction she had at school, and how the adults there even kind of reconfirmed that she should be responsible for another young boy's actions. And I was just like, oh my gosh, we need to do something. So I'm going to finish the book and probably put my thoughts together in a letter to the administration.
A strongly worded letter. I also really appreciated the way that she kept pointing out that we're women are socialized, or people that identify or are identified as female, right?
Yeah.
That we're taught to avoid it, or put it aside, or walk around it, or move away from it. And I think that that's, you know, just that further of that severing. And like, if we're creating a gap, you know, by saying, if we're creating a gap by saying, okay, you have to move away, you can't feel this, or you have to just like, whatever it is, then like that gap is going to be filled with something, right? And that's, I think, where that sadness comes in, is that, well, I feel something, and in a lot of situations it's negative, and what is that negative feeling, right? And we're allowed to feel sadness, especially as women, we're allowed to be sad, right?
Right.
And I also, but I appreciated that Soraya also focused, you know, she answered a question about the fullness. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is later in the book that I haven't gotten to yet. Is that true?
Maybe.
Okay. Well, and she talked about how it's really hopeful and that anger is a signal. It's a warning signal that something is wrong, that something is not quite right, that something, it's a danger sign, right? Anger is a signal emotion. And so when we're also taught not to feel that signal, then we're also taking away for women to feel danger.
Right.
Or so that something's wrong. And so, and then the reverse of that would be the movements we've seen over the last couple of years in recent history, right? Of the Me Too movement and the women's marches, like really reclaiming that signal that thinks something's wrong.
Yeah.
And I thought that you know, what Macy's feeling is a signal that something's wrong. And
yeah,
she's being taught by maybe her school community that she should fill it with sadness.
Yeah. Or just somehow take responsibility for someone else's actions, which
yeah,
I just, it's so interesting because it was so subtle. I don't have anything against the administration at her elementary school, her teachers,
right.
Even nothing, like, don't get me wrong, please, no one, like, if you who these people are, like, don't worry, I'm not upset with the school, because I think it is really common. It's so subtle. It's these little interactions, and even the way, you know, we're sitting around the dinner table as a family, and how often our son interrupts the girls talking, and will and just insert himself into the conversation, and how, you know, it was a really good, she kind of talks about this in the book, that this starts in the family. It starts at home. She referred to like heterosexual marriages and families as gender inequality machines.
Yes, I loved that.
It was hilarious. It was so brilliant how she brought this up. And I thought, okay, how am I responding when our son interrupts the girls when they're talking or wants to interject and like mansplain, basically, like, you know, this is something that he has been taught, not explicitly, not necessarily by my husband or any other one man in his life, but by association in our society, that his voice is more important than a female's voice.
And
how much I'm just, we need to be, my husband and I need to be tuned into this to say, hey, wait a second, your sisters are speaking and you interrupted and that's not okay. We don't interrupt people.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, I don't have children, but, you know, I do have a couple of different things. One, I have a niece and nephew, right? And I get to see them, and they're both very energetic children. I mean, I don't think it's normal. But the way that we, even like the little things, and even I catch myself doing it too, and probably just because I'm overwhelmed by the total amount of energy coming out of this 4 and 2-year-old, is that, you know, for my niece, when she was 2, she was a pretty chill kid. She was, you know, the kid that just kind of just chill. She was just real mellow. She still had energy, but she could self-entertain. She was very early on easy to just sit there and hang out with her books or her stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so now she's 4 and my nephew is 2 and he is very rambunctious. He climbs everything. He's always trying to knock something over or test the boundaries. And that's just who he is. And, you know, he'll kind of pick at my niece. And even in those situations, you know, we're like, Clara, move away, or Clara, you know, use your words, don't hit back. Right.
Yeah.
And at the same time, Caleb, don't hate your sister, but it is that, even that dynamic at that young age where it's like, maybe because we just, oh, he's so rambunctious. He's just a boy at 2 years old. He's just being a boy at 2, you know? And just the interesting dynamics like that, just to see it. And I don't think it's a negative comment on my sister and brother-in-law, obviously, but it is so interesting that it just happens. It's so pervasive in our culture that we do it so without thinking.
Well, that was okay. So this is what the story was with Macy at school. She was sitting under a covered playground, talking with some friends, and these boys started throwing balls at the girls. And Mimi said, stop, multiple times, you know, really assertively. She's not shy about telling us no or stop, which I love. But then when she went to the playground teacher, the playground teacher's response and then her classroom teacher's response was, we'll just go sit somewhere else.
Right.
And as I was talking with another girlfriend about this, she said, what is so profound about this interaction is that as this scales, as she grows up, what this turns into is girls at the bar just trying to hang out, have a drink, have a good time. And the guy next to her is like, hey, I want to buy you a drink. Hey, dance with me. Hey, can I get your number? And it doesn't matter how many times the polite, no, thank you, I'm not interested, I'm going to ignore you, turns into, come on, let's just go to another bar.
Yeah.
And we're renewing ourselves when really it's this guy that needs to get a life and get lost.
Yeah. And I think Soraya brought that up in terms of like space, right? How, about how like how women just are constantly not encouraged to take up space.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that it starts in those really little ways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's interesting when I think about my upbringing, you know, I have an older sister, I'm the middle child, and then I have a little brother. And we were homeschooled through elementary school, and my mom was our primary teacher and stayed home with all of us through that time. And then my dad worked, right? And he owned his own business. So just the dynamic in the house was that mom was always in charge, right? She was our teacher, she was our mom, like she was the head honcho, right? And my little brother was the victim of my older sister and I's, like, you know, everything. So we would dress him up in our dress up clothes. He was always just like the third little sister and things. And, you know, I grew up and I think, like, I'm sure that I also was, of course I was affected by similar socializing things, you know, that we see in Macy or my niece and nephew, those kinds of things. But when I think about my childhood, I was like, you know, I feel somewhat fortunate perhaps that maybe that didn't happen as much in the home. I don't think for me, maybe just because, you know, of the matriarchal somewhat, you know, situation in my family, you know, I feel like my little brother got, I don't know, maybe it's just something like that. I just feel like for me, when I think about growing up, I don't think I started seeing it till public school. I really don't. Like, I really think that through elementary school, I see much more of a respect of me as a full person.
Yeah.
I don't really think I saw a lot of what we see for Macy even until I went to public middle school.
Yeah.
So I do think that it's interesting that, you know, there's just a spectrum of how we grow up.
For sure.
Yeah.
So one of the things that has been really interesting to me in this whole like journey reading this book, we picked it out or it was picked out for the group and okay, let's start reading it. And I kind of thought, I'm not really an angry person. Like I'm not comfortable feeling angry, and certainly like rage to me seems like another level. And she kind of addresses it in the book. But I'm curious, like, what's your relationship with anger, and has any of this, I know that you're not that far into the book, but
yeah,
how would you describe like where you fall kind of on that spectrum of feeling anger?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there was a time, I would say like fifth-ish grade for me, where I did go, you know, kind of in contradiction with what I just shared, but, you know, I did go through this kind of year, and it might've just been, you know, I kind of chalk it up somewhat to puberty, which is a real thing, right?
Yeah.
Emotions are hard. You know, I entered womanhood at 11, which is, I think, younger than, not these days, but in those days, I think that was younger than a lot of my friends.
Right? I'm my friends. Terrified of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We are on a speeding bullet train towards that.
Yes. Exactly. And so, and you know, I think part of it is that there were other some things going on in my family and whatnot, but I remember there being this like probably a year where I was very angry. And I remember very vividly, you know, just being upset at things and getting really angry and having to kind of get, not put in timeout, but put, you know, my mom or my dad, you know, would go into a room and they'd sit me down. They'd want to like talk me through it. And I remember describing it as a volcano. I was like, I'm just a volcano and I'm ready to explode. And I just explode sometimes. And I just remember that really vividly. And so I think, you know, there was a respect of those feelings, but also clearly my parents were trying to make sure that I was okay and that I wasn't going to break anything in the house or like run away or set something on fire, right? There was clearly a concern. And so I remember that. And then, you know, I just think through going to middle school and just, you know, all the other things, like that just kind of stopped. I don't really remember there being like a resolution. You know, kind of fast forward to as an adult, I am not quick to anger, but I am very energetic. I think that
I know.
Beth, you have always nailed it. When we worked together, you would always say, you know, Kat, you're at a 12. I need you to bring it down to like a 7-8, right?
That's all the rest of us can absorb collectively. Yes. So you're going to have to temper it a little bit.
Turn it down. Yeah. So I've always been super high energy. And so, but that energy has always just been high energy and it's just funneled into everything I do.
Yeah.
But the anger piece of it, I've never felt quick to anger, but I will say in the last year, I have really learned to recognize anger as anger and channel that a bit more, especially in my work life. And so I think that I kind of would consider myself not a super angry person, but I would say that as I get a little bit older, I oddly enough, from remembering those times when I was, you know, roughly in fifth grade, clearer and recognizing those feelings the same. That feeling then feels the same as now. Mm. But when I feel it now, I feel like I have to sit with it for 2 days. I have to talk to my friends about it. I got to go to therapy because I don't want to set anything on fire or burn anything down. So I do feel like I am feeling it more, but I also am so cautious of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's, you've described something that I feel similarly about. Like, I would not describe myself as an angry person. I would say I feel passionate about things. And I think that's a similar, like a word that's been used to describe you similarly. Yeah. you and I have that in common. Mm-hmm. But the way that Sarai was talking about it, she, and this was kind of towards the end of her talk, she sprinkled it throughout, and I'm so curious to kind of keep chewing on this, but she talked about the joy of anger and the connection that it brings. And that was something I'm still not, I don't know that I have my head fully wrapped around it, because joy and anger seem so contradictory, so in opposition to each other. But what she was talking about is specifically the movements that we've been seeing and that we have seen all throughout our history as women, you know, starting with the suffragettes and the temperance movement and, you know, women's rights. And now we're in like the third wave of feminism and women's rights, and with, you know, hashtag Me Too and Time's Up and all the things that we're seeing. And so she referred to that as the joy and the fullness and the connection that anger can bring. And I thought, okay, I can relate to joy for sure. And I'm drawn to things that are connecting and building. And if I can find a way to experience real anger about real things, because like you said, it is a warning signal, it's a warning light that something is not right. And when the collective consciousness of females and women are all feeling the same thing or something similar, we can pretty accurately say something's not right. But to be able to tap into that, and really feel those feelings. So I don't know.
That resonates with me. And part of it too, is I think that when I think about joy and anger, I think a lot about joy after anger is kind of how I am. As you were sharing that, that's kind of what came up for me. I think that there can be sadness after anger, there can be confusion, there can be pain, there can be trauma, but there also, I think there could also be joy. And the reason I think maybe it's an after is that what we do with the anger or how it affects us or how we choose to engage with it, maybe that has to do with it. Mm. But I also think that I do really resonate with the idea of that collective anger and how it can be a change agent. And I think we see a very, in my opinion, very destructive use of anger in Trump. And as a white man, he gets to do whatever he wants with his anger, literally. And he is uplifted for it. His base loves him for it. And his anger is what got him elected, right? And I think. And so so I think too, like if that's such the stark contrast, and I do think that when I think about it that way, it, to some degree, I think I don't want to be angry because I don't want to be like Trump, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I respect the differences of political opinions, but in my opinion, that's how I see it. But that's that I think is where we get to see that white heteronormative patriarchy really come in, is that they're like, yes, exactly, don't feel it, right? Because you don't want to be like Trump, right? It is that kind of thing, whereas I'm like, no, if I get to harness the anger just like Trump does, but to my goals and my ends, then like, yes, like that is the power of movements, right? Mm-hmm. And I do think that anger can be very productive. And I also think that sometimes it gets to just be what it is. I think that that's something that, like, I see a lot of feminists that I admire doing really well, including Soraya. Oh, like, for example, you know, one of our friends asked about if Soraya meditates, right? And she laughed so hard. She just keeled over laughing.
That was the best moment in the whole
talk. It was great.
And then we found out later that it was Sarah's question.
Yeah, it was. And I loved the question. I think the question was, you know, do you meditate to help, you know, you manage your anger, or do you feel like you use yoga in your practice to, you know, kind of get rid wasn't the right word, but kind of get rid of your anger.
But and just like, how are they, like, how, if you meditate, how do you,
right,
how do you meditate and be angry at the same time when meditation is about
letting things go. And so she laughed so hard. And I also resonated with that so strongly because I definitely do not meditate. Remember life at a 12. And I don't really enjoy yoga. I'm not there. So when she laughed, I was like, yes, exactly. It's hilarious to me. But also I think she was like, no, I use it. I write about it. I use it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I love that because for her, anger gets to just be there.
Yeah.
Right. To me, that was like, she just gets to have anger just like I can have everything else in my feelings that day or that moment.
Yeah.
Anger just gets to be there. Which is not what, right, that we're socialized to believe.
Right. And that is really powerful. That is really powerful to just be able to say, you know what? It's okay that you feel angry about this. You should feel angry. Mm-hmm. And
that's that.
That sucks. But it just is. And you get to feel that. It's super powerful.
Yeah. And I agree. I do think that feeling joy and anger is something that is not a combination that we're taught to feel, right? Because we replace anger with sadness. And so that's, I do agree that is something that we should continue to chew on, like you said, because I think that it really sheds light on a connection that will help us explore how to use our anger and our rage, right? And how to feel that.
So good. Well, this has been such a really interesting talk. I was looking forward to this. Since we went, I was like, I need to talk to somebody about this. We need to do this. We didn't have a chance to after the talk.
We all had to run.
We all had to run. But I'm so glad that you were able to be with us and sit with us today, Kat.
Yes.
One question before we wrap up.
Yes.
I want to know what's making you really happy these days?
Oh, that's a fun one. What's making you really happy these days? You know, so to share with the podcast verse, universe, is that a thing I can say?
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the really exciting things on my docket for this year is I'm moving across the world to Saudi Arabia to work with my current company in a very similar role, but it's very exciting as well as daunting.
For sure.
And so in this bundle of emotions, anger being one of them as well, I'm angry at some things, but one of them is that I'm so deeply grateful for a couple of my friends, a lot of them, Nasty Gals especially included, but in the last couple of days, I've been very, very grateful for a couple of friends that have really taken up the mantle to plan some going away festivities. Mm-hmm. And so what's making me really happy is just the overwhelming support and love that's pouring in. And it makes me a little uncomfortable. I'm not always great at accepting gifts or help, but at the same time, it makes me so happy. So while it's a little bit uncomfortable, and I also might just be uncomfortable at the amount of happiness that it's bringing to me. But I think that's what's making me really happy is just the people in my life that are just surrounding me with incredible support and love and making this whole thing really enjoyable when it could be a total stress ball, chaos, madness.
Yeah.
Which it probably will be at times, but I think that's what's making me happy is just the people in my life. Beth, you included.
I love you.
I love you too. I'm so glad
that you were able to be on the pod today. This is really fun. And I hope that we get to do some more chats from Saudi Arabia.
Yes, we definitely should. We can do lots of things about sitting in places in Saudi Arabia.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be a whole thing.
Going to learn a lot.
Culture and...
I'm going to learn a lot. It's going to be a lot.
You are.
We can do the pod in Arabic sometime.
I don't know about that, but... Well, thanks.
Oh, thank you, Beth. So, such a pleasure to be here, really.
Yeah. Okay, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. We will be live with an all-new episode of You Can Sit With Us next Tuesday. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and share with a friend. That's what good friends do. Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll see you next time. Thank you.